looks like a clinic on how not to do things on the baseball field.
Now, the show that Red Sox Nation turns to first. This is Boston's most listened to nightly baseball show, The Baseball Reporters with Tony Maz. Brought to you by Big Y Grocery Store, T-Mobile, Ron Bouchard's Auto Stores, Jordan's Furniture, Integrity from Marvin Windows and Doors, TestTrips.com, MGM Springfield, Acura of Auburn, Anderson McQuay, Direct Federal Credit Union, Gravely Lawnmowers, AceTicket.com, WFXT-TV, and Mohegan Sun. On Boston's home for sports, 98.5, The Sports Hub.
Hammered deep down the left field line. He ripped it, and that ball is gone. Carlos Correa launching number 9, a 2-run homer to get the Astros the quick lead.
Well, that didn't take long, Red Sox fans. How do you like that one? I heard that one last night. I actually saw that one last night. Usually the game starts at 7 o'clock, so I'm accustomed to telling you that I hear it on the way home. First inning last night. First inning, Red Sox and Houston Astros in this big four-game series. And you know what? The same thing happened that happened last October when the Red Sox and the Astros played in the postseason. The Astros get out in front. The Red Sox pitching staff couldn't handle that Houston lineup. And so there you go. Houston is off and running. Carlos Correa, the fourth batter of the game. Two-run home run. Astros go up 2-0. Houston never trailed en route to a 4-2 victory over the Red Sox in the first game of a four-game weekend series. That, depending on your perspective, means something or doesn't mean something, which is my question to you tonight, the Red Sox fan. Do you put stock into what happens this weekend? Really, do you? It's a long season in baseball. I believe that there are, quote-unquote, checkpoint series, mileposts, along the way during the regular season. In fact, Alex Cora even made a comment about it a couple of days ago, that there are points during the year that you look at a series and you say, this is a big one. Okay? Do you do that as a fan? 617-779-0985. Jimmy Stewart, our producer, will open up the phone lines right away. And we will talk about the Red Sox and the Astros last night, the performance of Drew Pomeranz, the importance of this four-game series. So I'll tell you what, Jim Murray, let me ask you. Do you put stock into these four games one way or another?
Of course.
Okay. And so I find it important to bring this up now. I was just talking to Matt McCarthy in the hallway. And so he said he thinks the Red Sox have more to lose than to gain this weekend in this series. That if the Red Sox get beat up by the Astros, that it will really be more of a negative than the positive would be if they were to have a good series. Now, look, we all know October is going to matter. Okay, October is ultimately what's going to matter, and this team's going to be in October, either as a division champion or as a wild card team. But their ability to win in October, to me, or my perception of their ability to win in October, will be affected by series like this one. See, if they get their asses kicked by the Yankees and the Astros all year, particularly in road ballparks in Houston and in New York, if that happens all year long, when they get to the playoffs, I'll look at them, and maybe they'll look at themselves, and they will say, I don't know if we can beat these guys. I mean, we really didn't have any success here during the regular season. And I'll give you an example. In 2003, the Red Sox lost the LCS in New York. They had it. They gave it away. So you know what happened the first series when they went into New York? They cleaned up on the Yankees. They cleaned up on them. They made a statement. The Yankees this year, last fall, lost to Houston in the American League Championship Series. They played Houston the first time in Houston. You know what they did? They won 3 out of 4. Then Houston went into New York, and you know what the Yankees did? They won 2 out of 3. So it feels to me like those teams, the two I just cited as an example, saw that it was a chance, an opportunity to make a statement. It was an opportunity to let the other side know, we're not the same team you played last year. We mean business. We're better than we were a year ago, and now we're going to prove it to you. So even if it's during the regular season, we're showing you that we're coming back at you in October. Okay, we're not demoralized or we're not down. In fact, we're better and we're stronger. We're going to come back and beat you in October. And then Drew Pomeranz goes out last night and in the first inning gives up a 2-run home run. So now, again, does that translate? Does it affect what's going to happen in October? I don't know. You tell me. But what I do know is that there's an opportunity here for the Red Sox to make a statement. They talked about this series, going into this series and making a statement. And then they went out and fell behind and they never had the lead again in Houston, and they lose 4-2. No, the margin of defeat was smaller than it was last October, and the intensity is not the same as it would be in a playoff game.
No, but it mostly felt like the same, though. I mean, Drew Pomeranz was mostly mediocre, and the bats were silent. They had a little bit of a pop in the ninth, but other than that, it felt like more of the same in terms of the playoff series last year. It didn't feel like they came out and they wanted to, you know, shove it right in the Astros' face and say, all right, we're for real. It just felt like their flaws were exposed again.
So Murray, this to me is now becoming a concern, and there are three more games in this series, but I felt like last night was the most winnable of the three, of the four, rather, because tonight, Gerrit Cole, tomorrow, Justin Verlander, Sunday, Charlie Morton. Again, combined, I think those guys are 19-3 this year. More importantly, they rank first, second, and fourth in the league in ERA. Three of the four hottest pitchers in the league you're going to face in the next 3 days. And I'm not saying the Red Sox can't beat them. I'm just telling you that the best opportunity they have is against Lance McCullers last night, and they get two runs. Two. More importantly, Pomeranz went out there and gave up two runs in the first, two more, it was either a fourth, he gave up two runs in the fourth because the Red Sox scored in the third to tie it. He gave it right back. He ends up going five innings, four runs. And I see a comment from Alex Cora today where he talks about Pomeranz and says, quote, he was a lot better, comparing Pomeranz last night to what he was earlier in the year. And at points last night, Pomeranz looked a little bit better. But if we've reached the point where we get excited when Drew Pomeranz gives up four runs in five innings, which, by the way, is an ERA of 7.20, if that is getting better, then that's a bad sign. And if you want to talk about the series and the matchup overall with the Astros, the last nine times that the Red Sox have played Houston in games started by members of their current rotation, okay, so that's everyone other than Doug Fister, who faced Houston last year and I think actually pitched a good game against them in the regular season, and then not so much in the playoffs. And he got shelled in the playoffs too. But if you take Doug Fister out, and just go by the current group of Red Sox pitchers, Sale, Price, Porcello, Rodriguez, Pomeranz. In the last nine games against Houston started by those Red Sox pitchers, the Red Sox record is 3-6. And you might say, wow, that's better than I thought. They actually won three. But listen to how the pitchers have performed. The starters in those games, 35 innings, 56 hits, and 36 runs. 35 innings, 56 hits, 36 runs, and 12 homers. So the walks per nine innings, over four. The hits per nine innings, over 14. The home runs per nine innings, over three. And the collective ERA, 9.26. As much as I want to see the Red Sox win these games this weekend, and I do, I need to see them pitch well against this team and this lineup. Starting with tonight and Chris Sale, because he's your ace. And we all want to chalk up Sale's struggles last year to fatigue in the months of September and October. Really, the second half of August, September and October. That's what we want to chalk up the failures of Chris Sale to late in the year last year. Fatigue. What's June 1st? He didn't pitch well in his last start. They lost the opener of the series. I'd like to think that Chris Sale will go out tonight and pitch a good game. What if he doesn't? Are you putting stock in it then? Because I am. I need to see the Red Sox pitch well against this lineup and be able to negotiate their way through this batting order before I believe that they can play with the big boys, the Astros and the Yankees, in September and October. I need to see them show that they can play with them in June before I see it in October. It would help me believe. I don't know if it would help you. 617-779-0985. Mike is in a car, kicks us off tonight. Hi, Mike.
Yeah, hey, Tony, after hearing those pitching stats, I feel like I just got punched in the gut. That's incredibly eye-opening, and it shows with losing last night, I don't know if they can get a split in this series, and I think based on the way the Yankees handled the Astros, you have to get at least a split to show you're for real. I think their record right now is soft, and if they can't handle these guys over the next three games, or at least show that they belong and keep every game close and not let them score early and often, I think they're in a lot of trouble. And I think we're going to be talking like we did last year of, are these guys going to be slipping like closer to that 500 mark as we pass the 4th of July.
Okay, so, Mike, I'm not worried about them going to 500 because the league's horrible. The league is horrible. The Red Sox will beat bad teams. They will beat probably 90% of the teams they play this year, 80, 85%, whatever. Whatever the winning percentage is, doesn't matter. They are going to play better than the majority of teams are going to face because the league really does. It blows. The league stinks this year. So they're going to win a lot of games. They're going to be in the playoffs. The division, I don't know about. But remember that this team is built, just like Dombrowski's teams in Detroit, on starting pitching. Except that when that Detroit team faced you in October and faced the Red Sox lineup, those guys pitch great. Scherzer, Verlander, even Anibal Sanchez, they all pitch well against you. That team was built on a dominating starting rotation against playoff teams. That Detroit rotation in 2013 was dynamite in the postseason. They were terrific. They lost because of their bullpen. This team has invested resources, both in terms of money and prospects dealt for Sale, prospects dealt for Pomeranz. They have invested resources in that rotation. And in the last nine starts made by this rotation against the Houston Astros, the ERA is over. They're allowing over a run an inning, and per nine innings, they are allowing over three home runs, they are allowing over four walks, and over 14 hits. Do you really think they can get these guys out? I'd like to see them show me that they can get these guys out. I mean, to me, it would be nice to know that they can rise to the occasion. 617-779-0985. Red Sox also have a developing injury situation. And you know what? If you're not worried about Dustin Pedroia, you should be. Dave Dombrowski told us that last year. We'll play that for you when we come back.
Boston's most comprehensive discussion of everything baseball. The Baseball Reporters, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Here's the thing I find most amazing. Baseball gets caught up.
You don't quit on your team.
When you want to win, play through anything.
The Baseball Reporters, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
The problem for Dustin is and will be, he has a bad knee. He's had it for years, and he's going to have to deal with that, and he does. He works very hard. The training staff works very hard on it. John works with him in trying to give him days where he needs to. And that's something we're going to have to deal with for an extended time period. And then there's times to treat him, and there's times when he's on it, it feels worse. And I'm not really sure why. I mean, I think it's a lot of times it's just a cumulative aspect of wear and tear. I don't know if there's a specific event at this time that hurt it a little bit more than others. But he has a bad knee that he's going to have to watch, and we're going to have to watch for the rest of his career.
That was Dave Dombrowski on Dustin Pedroia last year. Last year. And Jimmy Stewart, our producer, I know I'm throwing this at you last minute. Pedroia talked about his knee situation after the game last night. Might have been before the game. I know there's a cut in the system there. Pedroia talking about how they're going to have to manage it. Pedroia is one of these guys, as we all know. Okay, Pedroia wants to play. He was barking at Alex Cora in spring training about coming back and playing earlier than the Red Sox wanted to. And the Red Sox basically held him out till the end of June. End of May, rather. Basically held him out until the end of May. Pedroia is 1-for-11 so far, although, to me, defensively is where you'll really notice any issue with him in terms of how he's moving. And defensively, to me, just the sure-handedness of him at second base will make them a better team. But when Pedroia said what he said last night, it suggested to me that his knee is barking more than anyone wants to admit. Go ahead, Jimmy.
Well, I was a little sore during BP, and then I just figured, you know, I was just it. And then, I'm all my activation stuff before the game, and then still a little sore. And then I went out and ran, and, I got to be honest with them right now. You know, and they said this is a part of it. This is why you have to be honest so we can catch it before, you know, you have to be down for a while. So that was it. So I just told them, and, you know, they said, hey, it's part of it. So, you know, they knew this was going to happen certain days, and today was one of those days. Stinks, but it is what it is.
Okay, so the fact that Pedroia said, I was sore and I went to them, I have to be honest. Either Pedroia has matured and he's worried about this knee, or maybe it's an either or to me it tells you that it's really bothering him. Pedroia is not one of these guys that would typically, you know, if it's a little sore, Pedroia wouldn't say anything, he'd play through it. Remember when he had, what did he have, a broken foot? Remember that when he was taking grounders out there on one knee and a broken foot or whatever the hell it was? He had some injury and he was out there in a boot taking ground balls to keep his... Now, look, maybe that is just for the visuals and, wow, look at Dustin Pedroia, the gamer. But I do think Pedroia is kind of like that. I mean, he wants to play. There's never been an issue with Dustin Pedroia not wanting to be in the lineup, ever. So the fact that now he's being bumped again or scratched and he's not playing tonight either... You do sort of look at it and say, what's this really going to be going forward? How often is Pedroia really going to be able to play? That whole microfracture surgery thing, that thing often does not go well. There are a lot of guys that have that injury that are never the same and can never really play again. So keep an eye on it. And you sort of look at it and say, well, all right, well, now Pedroia's out of the mix. They released Hanley Ramirez to create that spot. And I know it wasn't about Pedroia, and Felger and I had this discussion in the afternoon, but I look at it now and say, well, so you waived, if Hanley ends up somewhere and starts hitting, the Red Sox are going to look like donkeys. And I know that it was all about that contract. I know. But it also bugs me that the Red Sox would release a player because they don't want him to vest a contract option for next season. Find another way. Find another way. Give the guy a buyout or something if you have to. Whatever it is, but find another way. Back to the calls. Chris is in Amesbury. Go ahead, Chris.
Hey, what's up, fellas? So for me, I really felt like we need a two-game win out of this series.
At a minimum, Chris.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm really not confident that Sale and Price can get that done now because last night was an absolute must-win. I don't know how you feel, but that's just where I'm at.
Well, so, Chris, look, I'm always reluctant to use the term must win early in the year. But in terms of this series, I think it was the most winnable game based on the pitching matchup or based on the pitchers you're going to face. Again, in terms of the guys they're throwing at you, tonight's Gerrit Cole. I mean, he's been insanely good since they picked him up. Verlander has a 1.11 ERA, I think it is. And I'm going to get you the exact numbers. Morton is 7-0. He's unbeaten, and his ERA is in the low twos. So when you look at the three starters that are thrown at you the next 3 days, they rank first, second, and fourth in the league in ERA. I mean, that Houston rotation has been lights out here in the early part of the year. So fine, you have Sale going tonight. You should feel good about that. His last start wasn't great, and the last time he faced the Astros in October, he got hammered. So let's see if Sale bounces back. I'd like to believe that he would. I believe in Sale's competitiveness. I certainly believe in his stuff. So to me, this feels like the next best game to win because you have Sale going. But then tomorrow, Verlander against Price. Who do you like in that one? Tell me, Jimmy Stewart or Jim Murray?
Verlander.
No. What are we going to get from David Price tomorrow night? Do you have any idea?
No, who knows?
Five outs tops.
Jimmy, you don't even have him making it through the second inning?
That's correct. He's going to get shell-shocked by the Houston Astros.
I mean, he has been going pretty well here for a little bit, but, you know, when he's faced, you know, really good competition so far this season, he's gotten his face ripped off.
My hand is numb.
Right. He was soft. I mean, remember, he told us after his last outing that he's soft. So, I don't know what you're going to get there. And then Porcello, the last time out was better. He got into some trouble late in the game, and that's when...
That sucked.
Yep, and then Joe Kelly, that's when Joe Kelly came in and bailed him out in the last game. Porcello.
Fell on my hands.
But, you know, I just think these guys are going to have to be on top of their game here the next 3 days. Sale, Price, and Porcello. Those are your three best guys. Okay, between Price and Porcello, you have $51 million a year invested in the starting pitching. And Sale, you had to give up two good prospects for. Those are your three best guys. Going against their best. And the Red Sox have not been able to negotiate their way through this Astros lineup at all, really going back to the middle of last year. I need to see them pitch well in this series.
I worry about Price's allergies as well. I mean, especially if they have fresh-cut grass in Houston.
Remember, though, they're inside, Jimmy.
I've always had to battle, whether it's fresh-cut grass or cats or I found I'm allergic to dogs.
So they're in a bubble, so to speak. They are in a bubble
right,
in Houston.
He has been better in those bubbles.
He has been better in a controlled environment, that's right. So Andrew's in Bradford. Andrew, what do you got?
Hey, what's going on, Maz? You know, I got a quick question for you and then just a Red Sox-Yankees comparison. My question for you is that, you know, you're a BBWA a-hole. You've been covering the game for a long time.
I like the way you did that. Very good.
Yeah. Do you think Mookie Betts has the quickest hands you've ever seen? Because the way he's able to turn on an inside fastball, I've never seen anything like that.
So, Andrew, I don't know if he has the fastest. I mean, there's a lot of guys that have had fast hands. But I appreciate the question, though, because it's, you know, there are guys who are hands hitters that really can get their hands through there fast, and Betts is one of them. The last guy I saw for the Red Sox that could do it the same way he does it is Nomar. Nomar was ridiculous before the wrist injury. Ridiculous, similar to Betts. I mean, I'd put them in the same class. Another guy, if you want to start throwing names around and just guys who were hands hitters and had great hand speed, Paul Molitor. Go back and look at Paul Molitor sometime. Paul Molitor's ability to turn on a ball in the inner half of the plate was just like these guys. So, those, you know, the guys I mentioned, Betts and Garcia Parra. Now, I'd have to think of others. Jim Rice had quick hands. But, you know, Rice was just pure strength relative to those other guys. So, you know, Mookie's another one, though, I'm getting a little worried about. Out of the lineup again tonight. So this is now going on a week that Mookie Betts has not played because of tightness on his side, which certainly feels like the beginnings of an oblique injury. And I understand why the Red Sox want to be careful with it. But he didn't play on Sunday. Today is now Friday. So that's 6 days. Meanwhile, you're operating with a wounded Dustin Pedroia. You know, every team carries more pitchers now to begin with. Maybe they'd have been better off putting this guy on the disabled list and actually having a healthy body here. This is another one I wonder, like, to me, there's now a question in there about how they've managed the roster in the last week going into this series with Houston. I just feel like these are big games for the Red Sox. If they're not big games for the players, they're big games for us to understand what this team is and what they can be and just how good they really are. And so far, it feels a lot like last October. Pomeranz went out there and gave up a home run in the first inning and has a 7 ERA last night. And for the year, his ERA's in the high sixes. So not a good start. Murray's Get Your Headlines when we come back. More adventures on the bases with a certain outfielder, son of Psycho. We'll do that next.
The Baseball Reporters, 98.5, The Sports Hub. From the field.
You're the one who threw the pitch.
To the clubhouse.
They're a reliever short.
To the corner office.
That sends all the wrong messages.
We have the Sox covered.
Because that's the way I look at it.
The Baseball Reporters on 98.5, The Sports Hub.
1-2, and that one lined into left. Kemp on the move. It's over his head. Jackie Bradley coming around. Benintendi right behind him. Benintendi running through a stop. Here's a play at the plate. He's safe. Bogart sliding into third.
They may look at this at Benintendi's play at home plate. I'll tell you what, Tony Kemp took an awful route after that ball. Now, here's the slide at home plate. Is the hand in before the... I believe it is. It looks like the hand is in there before the tag. He ran right through the stop sign of Carlos Fables down there in third base.
Well, they are going to take a look.
Here comes the hand first over the plate, and then the tag is up around the neck area.
So Alex Cora delighted, and the ball game even 2-2. Xander Bogaerts down to third. He picks up two RBIs, even though Benintendi ran through the stop.
Then there's this guy, Andrew Benintendi, son of Psycho, who runs the bases like his hair's on fire all the time, or his pants, or whatever it is, but he runs the bases like some bodily part or his hair is on fire all the time. So here's my question to you as a Red Sox follower or baseball fan. With regard to base running, does the end always justify the means? In other words, because Benintendi blew through a stop sign last night and was safe, does that mean it was the right thing or the right move? He made a hell of a slide at the plate, by the way, to get his hand in there. He did. It was close, though. He was right up Jackie Bradley's backside, and it was the tying run. But nonetheless, with the way Benintendi runs the bases, I don't know, if I'm Alex Cora and he scores and he comes back to the dugout, do I say, well, you scored, but next time, don't do that? Or do you say, good job? It's like the equivalent of a guy taking a bad shot in basketball. Bad shot. It went in, but don't do it again. So with Benintendi, again, to me, this is something to watch with Benintendi. This guy on the bases, he's like the unknown, or I was going to say illegitimate son of Steve Lyons. Son of Psycho. That's what he is on the bases. Guy's a complete kamikaze out there. Back to your calls here. Lewis is in Providence. Go ahead, Lewis.
Hey, Maz. You know, talking about Justin Verlander here. You know, last year he was available on the market, right? Sox didn't want him because they're going over the luxury tax, correct?
Yeah, that was one of the reasons, yeah.
One of the reasons, right. In retrospect, you know, Astros pick him up, the rest is history, right? In retrospect, looking back at it now, he's got a 1.11 ERA, he's crushing it, and we still got an undependable October rotation. You know, Porcello, we don't know. Sale, we don't know. Pomeranz sucks. Price is a pansy. So at this point, moving forward, do we do something similar to the Astros did last season? And one last question on a
Lewis, one question at a time. So let's keep it to this. But before we go on Verlander, you make a good point. He tipped the scales last year. There's no two ways about it. There are a lot of deadline deals that don't have huge impact. His did, and he's tipped the scales in the American League, in the American League in general, and maybe in all of baseball. And then beyond that, they've gone out and acquired Gerrit Cole as well. But let me ask you this: would you rather have Verlander, or would you rather have J.D. Martinez? Which one? Because last year they needed offense, so which one would you rather have?
Martinez is a bigger need. I agree with that statement. And I know you say that bullpen is a pressing need here, but if we don't have the starters, we don't need the bullpen. Yes, we need the firepower in the lineup, but at the same time, we also need help in the rotation, an October starter.
Okay, so I want to see how this goes in this series. That's one of the reasons I want to watch this. If you're Dave Dombrowski and you're watching this series, and your starters go out and get their brains beat in again by the Astros, do you start to reassess? Do you look at it and say, you know what, maybe we do need a starter. We'll stick Price in the bullpen again, and then we'll be a better team as a result of it. And I'm not telling you they can go out and get the next Justin Verlander, who I don't even know what Verlander's average annual salary is, but it's got to be in the high 20s or low 30s. I don't think he eclipsed $30 million, so it's got to be 25. He's got to be making $25 million a year, which is why I said to you him or J.D. Martinez. It's one or the other based on their current payroll structure. You can't have both. Brian's in a car. Go ahead, Brian.
Hey, Matt. Now, I don't see Sale as being a money-first player in the league. I know you play baseball for the money, but I don't see him going for the, you know, most of the money. With that being said, he has a $13 million option for next year. Do you think that pisses him off if you don't extend him this offseason?
Well, Brian, here's what I would tell you with regard to Sale's money, okay? The option is the option. It's in his deal. He doesn't, I mean, they already picked up, I think they picked up an option for this year on Sale. He had two of them. And so they get him for both years at $13 million. But my question to you is, if they were to go to him and negotiate an extension right now, you say he's not a money guy, what do you think it would take to sign him?
Well, I see himself as seeing, you know, he's better than Price, obviously. He's making $18 million less than him a season. That being said, I think he would take anywhere between 25 and 30 a year.
Okay, I think you're wrong. I think that when he gets the chance to strike it, he's going to strike it, and there's no way he's going to take less than Price. Given how he's pitched on an average annual basis now. Now, in terms of the length of the contract, the Red Sox might say, we gave Price 7 years. He was a free agent. We're not going to do that for you. We'll give you five, but we'll give you what, $35 million a year? I mean, it's going to be something like that. My point is this. I wouldn't bet on them keeping Chris Sale beyond next year. I think that one's going to get tricky. If the Red Sox, if the Price thing was a failure and they didn't want to pay Lester, why all of a sudden would they pay Price $35 million a year when he gets to free agency? I mean, that's making the same mistake over and over and over again. That is the definition of insanity or stupidity, depending on what you want to call it. Jack is in Rhode Island. Go ahead, Jack.
Hey, Tony, how you doing?
Good.
One quick thing on Verlander. That guy's about to get popped for steroids. I mean, he's 35 years old and he's having the best year of his career. Something smells funny.
So Jack, listen, I rule out nothing, but he is one of these guys who has been really, really vocal against steroid users, right?
Which is dumb, I think, because he's about to get nailed. Like, that was who without sin cast the first stone. Shut your mouth and just keep pitching.
Okay, go.
Because the reason I'm calling those, let's deal with Tyler Thornburg. We need bullpen help. He was supposed to be the guy when we traded away Shaw. I haven't seen him yet. What's the deal?
Okay, so the last I heard about Thornburg was that they were backing him off, that he hadn't necessarily had any sort of setback, but they were going to back him off. So what have you, either of you guys seen the latest on him, on Tyler Thornburg? Just curious as to whether there's any sort of recent update. The last I heard was that they basically had backed him off and slowed him down. And this is one of the dangers of these injury guys. You're learning it with Pedroia. You're learning it with Thornburg. We learned it last year with Carson Smith. Yep, he'll be back in May. Yep, he'll be back in June. Yep, he'll be back in August. The reality was he never really contributed anything of substance to them all year long. So there's always, you know, with these guys, you just don't know. And even if they can come back and pitch, what are they going to pitch like?
He's starting another rehab assignment with the Pawtucket tonight.
Okay. So let's keep an eye on Thornburg. They had backed him off. And, you know, one of the reasons they do that, there's only a set amount of time you can send a guy in a rehab assignment. So it used to be, and I don't have it in front of me, it used to be 20 days for positional players, 30 days for pitchers, but you could suspend it. So in the case of Thornburg, if he was down there for 15 days, then they call him off the rehab because he needs a break, then they can put him back down for another 15. So let's see how it shakes out with Thornburg, but I'm not holding my breath there. I mean, we're already at June 1st. The trading deadline now is July 31st. You know, or I say now 2 months away. It's always at the end of July. But as much as people say it's a long season, you know, the games that matter are the ones in September. True. But you have to make judgments, determinations, and decisions on your roster and on your team by July 31st. That's when the best players are available. So that's when you have to know what you've got. Series like this one between the Red Sox and the Astros are important for that reason. This team kicked your ass in the playoffs last year. Your starting pitching couldn't get through that lineup. As good as your starters are, you couldn't get through that lineup. Now you've started another series with them, and we're going to celebrate the fact that Drew Pomeranz made it through five innings and gave up four runs? Like, that's good news? A guy puts up a 7.2 ERA in a game, and that's good news? No way. They got to be better than that. These are the types of things we're assessing and looking for in this series. Ray's in Revere. Go ahead, Ray.
Yeah, I'm with you on that, Tony. And I have to say, I think they've got a window here of 1 or 2 years. You talk about Sale coming up and Price might opt out, and they've got a bunch of young players they've got to sign. And, you know, guys, the thing that's changed in baseball is you've got the play-in game for a wild card. They're playing 700 ball, and they can't shake the Yankees. And, you know, I really think they need to play for the division. And, you know, the Yankees have the big move. They've got the prospects. They will go out and get that starting pitcher that they need. You know, and I think it really is going to come down to whether or not they want to go after it this year. They don't have the prospects. So they're going to have to add payroll. And I know I've been dogging John Henry on payroll, and I admit that I'm wrong. This guy's got $56 million of guys he's cut off the roster and he out of 235. And if you add in that Cuban guy he traded for Sale, it's $120 million. So, you know, they're part committed. I think this is the season that they have to go for it, because I don't think they've got more than a 1 or 2 year window.
So, Ray, just quickly, do you think they are not going for the division? Because you said they have to go for the division.
Well, I think they have to add to the roster to go for the division. So I think the next 2 months, they're going to have to decide. Because, you know, I don't know. Do they want to leave it to one game, go up against Ohtani and get blown out? It's not worth it.
Okay.
I really think they need to add.
Okay, so look, I think they're going for the division. I don't think there's any question about that. The question you're asking, really, is are they good enough? That's what you're asking. Are they good enough? Sounds to me like you think no. And at the moment, I don't think they're as good as the Yankees or the Astros. And look, one of the benefits or beauties of having been here in Boston during this unbelievable run by Boston teams over the last 17, 18 years, and it really has been extraordinary, but one of the real lasting benefits of it is that we know what a winner looks like. And we know what a winner looks like in every sport. So we know what it takes to win a championship. We know the look and feel of a championship team. We know that now. So we can look at something and say, they're good, they're not good enough. And so the Red Sox, they're good. No question they're good. They've made the playoffs the last 2 years, won two divisions, 93 wins per season. They're a good team, but they haven't been good enough. That Astros team, has the feel and look of a championship team because they won it last year, first of all. But beyond that, there's an intangible there. There's an ability to elevate there against good competition. And I think the Yankees have that too. I know a lot of people dismiss this. They lost to that team last year. They have faced them twice this year, and they've gone 5-2. They took 3 out of 4 in Houston, rallying in the late innings after blowing a lead in the last game of the series down in Houston and doing the same thing in New York in the middle game of the series. They made a point of beating the Astros. Okay, those teams, to me, have shown an ability to really elevate and make a statement. Even in a regular season game, there's an edge there. I need to see it from the Red Sox. I need to see it from the Red Sox. Because I think they're good, but I'm with Ray. I don't think they're good enough. Not yet.
The Baseball Reporter's Tony Mazz, 98.5, The Sports Hub.